Now that we've come to the end of this general exposition, I just want to see if I understood correctly the basic premise. And it seems to me that the average person, the average citizen, is trying to live a life which follows natural experience. You wake up in the morning, you interact with people all day, you sleep at night, and life goes on. And then you encounter the law. And what happens is that that natural existence, which you understand intuitively and directly with your eyes and ears, that's not how things go. It's an Alice in Wonderland kind of a situation where you enter into a playing court where you don't know the rules of the game, and you're supposed to play tennis with these people who are playing a game that may look to you initially like tennis, but really the rules are quite different, and almost everything you do turns out to be a mistake. So you have to turn your guidance over to an attorney, someone who is going to figure out the rules and run the rules for you. But if you don't understand those rules, you're basically helpless to direct the outcome. And so what I understood you to be doing was to pretty much give us the ground rules of that playing court, even though it's several playing courts superimposed one on top of the other. It's not even one game. It's several games, the admiralty game, the equity game, the common law. So it is bewildering.
Absolutely. In law school, I was never taught common law. No lawyer is. We may have had a lecture on common law. It took about 2 hours. That's the only exposure we had in law school. We were taught to practice admiralty equity law. And that's pretty much all they do nowadays. Common law has been forgotten, but it's still in the Constitution and Article 3, Section 2. Law means common law. And we're subject to common law with harsh punishments if we violate it, but you must have damaged someone or their property. What's happened, I guess, since 1913, been an erosion of our constitutional rights by the international banking community to control us, to control every American, and probably to subvert the entire Constitution. And the way that's done is, for instance, right now we have an insupportable federal debt. The bankruptcy of 1938 allowed them to take possession of every bit of property in this country and to pledge each citizen their life's work as guarantee for the bankruptcy. Now, they couldn't do that as a natural person, so they had to create an entity which they could control. This is how it works. As soon as the child is born, they create a certificate of live birth where the name is spelled in upper and lowercase letters, which is required for proper noun in English grammar. As soon as that happens, I can't prove it, but I'm almost positive that the hospital gets about $9,000 for turning that certificate of live birth over to the state's Human Services Department, Health Human Services, which creates a birth certificate. Now, the birth certificate created will have all capital letters on it, which means it's a legal fiction created by the state. Now, all the statutes in the state control its creation, the corporations, and or legal fictions that it creates. So it created your name in capital letters. That's not you. It's an empty shell that resembles you, but it has no substance, no heart, no soul. But the moment you answer to it, you become it, subject to all the statutes that control it. We all have many masks that we wear, and that's one of the masks that we have. In 1938, they took our property, which used to be allodial. Nobody ever paid property taxes. It was allodial, not taxable, could not be taken for any type of judgment. Your property was sacrosanct. They needed that property as collateral for the bankruptcy, as well as the labor of every individual in this country. So they couldn't do it in a natural person. They did it under legal fiction. If you check your title for your property, it'll be all capital letters. If you check your birth certificate, it's all capital letters. This is a creation of the state that controls their creation. Now, the 14th Amendment bastardized the citizenship status of this country. De jure citizens, which are natural citizens, as opposed to de facto, which is presently what we have, is predicated upon the idea at the time that the blacks were to be citizens of the United States, Washington, D.C., and of the state wherein they resided. Well, the language has been interpreted by the courts to mean that they are property, really, black people were property of the federal government.
This is right after the Civil War.
After the Civil War, 1868. White people had never needed any protection that the 14th Amendment gave them. We already had the same protections on the 4th and 5th Amendments. We never needed the 14th Amendment. But right now, if you go to federal court, there's a legal presumption that you are a U.S. citizen. Now, the only way to overcome that legal presumption is to expatriate. Now, the statutes are very clear. They're in place. 2 weeks before they passed the 14th Amendment, they put the expatriation process in statutes so a person can follow and expatriate if they choose to. It doesn't mean you leave the country. That means that you're not a U.S. citizen, because you expatriate the citizenship of the United States. You can't expatriate where you're born. The law of jus soli, that is the law of place of one's birth. That's a natural law. God gave it to us. It's God's law. And all common law is predicated upon natural law. Right now in this country, we have over 40 million laws created by man, state, federal, and local. 40 million. God gave us only 10. But right now, if you sit back and look at it and see what ties us to the federal government, what contracts tie you? That's the only way you can be tied to federal government jurisdiction, would be contracts. It's a nexus of some type. Do you have a Social Security card? Then you have a contract. Do you have a voting registration card? You have a contract. There's something called the Highway Safety Trust Fund, the Social Security Trust Fund, where we're the beneficiaries and they're the trustees. As beneficiaries, if we take a future or present benefit, then we're obligated to the articles of the trust. That's how they've trapped us and avoided the constitutional protections that were provided for us. If you've accepted a contract of Social Security, then you've accepted the contract provisions and the liabilities that go along, which is taxation and many other things. When I first retired at 50 years old, I bought everything cash and I was going to enjoy my golfing and my fishing. And then I got a notice from the Internal Revenue Service that owed them $25,000. I called them, what for? They said, well, it's early retirement. I said, well, who are you to tell me when to retire? Well, the statutes say at 59 and a half, you have to retire. Before that, there's a penalty of 10%. Not a tax penalty, it's just a penalty for early retirement. And I couldn't understand, how could they statutorily tell me when I could retire and enjoy my benefits? I didn't understand the tax code at that time. So rather than fight with them and pay penalties, I paid it. And then I began studying the tax code. It's 10,000 pages of absolute gibberish. I read it 3 times, its entirety. I've diagrammed every sentence in it 1 time to make sure exactly what it says. I understand the tax code very well now. And I realize that the tax code applies to legal fictions. It does not apply to the natural person. Your labor is not taxable. Never has been, never will be. They have an exemption. It's called Section 1341. It's a natural exemption. If you claim that exemption by rights and file a return, amend a return, you'll get 3 years of your paid taxes back again. But the tax professionals don't know about it. They're not taught it by the IRS. Who's the one who instructs CPAs and the tax preparers on how they're to perform their functions? They don't tell you what your rights are in the law. They try and obfuscate them. They've done a good job. It's the most confusing set of laws in the world, probably is Title 26, USC, which is the taxing code. But once they've established this legal fiction and you're not aware of it, and you answer to it every time you're called, a traffic ticket, for instance, if you get a summons from a traffic court, your name will be in capital letters. Once you appear, the rule of appearance waives all defects of process, meaning due process. So by showing up, you tell the judge that you are it, and you're comfortable being there, and you're volunteering to go into his equity court and be judged by that legal fiction name. And you pay the penalties that were ascribed to it.
Now, do you mean, when you say showing up, just actually appearing at the court building, or do you have to step up to a particular point within the courtroom in order to technically have shown up?
Now, I've heard people say if you've crossed the bar, then you've submitted jurisdiction. Just showing up, you've waived all defects of process, appearance.
Now, if you don't show up, however, then they make you believe you're in much worse shape for not having responded to the summons, the appointment.
Sure.
So what's the proper response?
Well, the first thing I think it do is call a common law abatement. Tells the judge, you're not saying I won't show up. You're saying, listen, Your Honor, correct the defects in your process and I'll appear. But there are many defects and you outline the defects. For instance, there must be a summons signed by the clerk of court or a judge, must have his seal, a court seal on it. If it's a warrant, must be a probable cause affidavit attached to it. Now, I've not seen one served properly in this country in the last 30 years. I was a police officer, and as a police officer, I served many warrants that were not proper. We would go to the court, grab a copy of a pad that was already stamped by the judge's name, rip it off, and go serve it. Judges very seldom ever sign them. There was no probable cause affidavits attached to it. We would give affidavits in criminal cases because there was a damaged party. That's common law, and they'll still follow common law procedure that way. When it comes to statutory law, they certainly go blind and deaf and don't do things right because they can't. This is the military court you're in now, under admiralty rules. It has been since 1861, probably with the introduction of the Lieber Code in the federal system, which is really martial law. It's not true martial law. There's a different category called martial rule. Martial rule is a less severe form of martial law. But the president has made executive orders, and the moment he declares martial law, they go into a force and effect, which are very draconian and absolutely destructive of our liberties. Right now, John Ashcroft is probably the worst attorney general we've ever had in the history of this country because the new Patriot Act, which he pushed through a dim-witted Congress to accept it, the Patriot Act is a misnomer. It's anything but that. It's an enslavement act, and it destroys the First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendments to our Constitution. It's extremely damaging.